Good evening and welcome to this edition of the Parenting Continuum, home of common sense, no-nonsense talk radio. Tonight we're going to be talking with my guest, Kurt Billings, who is a 20-year veteran researcher in microchips, chemtrails, and government experiments on the general public. Now, as you know from listening to this program over the years, I have been very interested in that topic, and we have brought a lot of this kind of information to you. Kurt has been doing some really interesting research and has literally discovered the physical hardware, if you will, concerning implant technology. And I think reading some of the stuff that Kurt sent me, it's a little bit frightening, and we're going to get into that tonight. And we're going to talk about that. Now, if you want to call in tonight, the number to call in is 303-537-3124. Again, that number is 303-537-3124. We've also got some information on the website about Kurt, and we've got a link to his website. We'll get to that here in just a moment. Now, Kurt has gained his insight and knowledge from 20 years of research into MKUltra, which is the CIA's acknowledged mind control research program, as well as other government mind control projects. Since 1979, Kurt has worked with victims of various types of occultic and mind control programming. Kurt has provided education and consultation services to mental health professionals, counseling victims of satanic ritual abuse and government mind control. Now, additionally, he has advised and aided in several police investigations involving satanic ritual abuse crimes. Kurt's authored a couple of books. One of them is called Somewhere Under the Rainbow, which he did in 1989, and he authored A Generation Deceived in 1993, and he has lectured extensively across the country. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program tonight, Kurt Billings. Good evening, Kurt. Are you there, Kurt? You know what? I might have the wrong here. Hold on a second. Yeah, there we go. Kurt, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, boy. So, yeah, we have a little. We still have a few technical glitches in our little studio here.
I know what that's like.
Well, anyway, thank you for being on the program tonight with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Let me start off by getting a little bit into your background, and we're going to talk tonight, as you mentioned, on your press release thing here to me. We're going to be talking about microchips, chemtrails, and government experiments on the general public. Basically, you have quite a background in this. Can you give us a little bit more insight into your background?
Well, let's see. I started as a CIA brat. My dad was OSS, OSI, World War II.
Uh-huh.
And I started out seeing my dad then went into the CIA and basically trained assassins for
wow.
many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
One of my uncles was involved in Operation Paperclip, driving the German doctors around. We're talking about the mind control doctors like Mengele.
Right.
So I saw a lot of things growing up as a kid.
If you don't mind me asking, I'm just curious. Mengele, that's an interesting name because wasn't he called the Angel of Death?
Yep.
What was he actually in the United States?
For many years, there are several congressional hearings that have gone on that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that he was in the United States. There was some testimony before the Radiation Committee where they were doing the government experiments. I think that was in the mid-90s, and they actually have a lot of stuff on him being in the United States. Personally, back in the early 60s, I saw him at the Presidio. Had dinner with him, my dad, and some others.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, the man was cold as death in the 60s. I can just only imagine.
You betcha. You know, I interviewed a fellow named Malachi Martin a couple of years ago. And Malachi Martin speculated that the infamous Dr. Green of government mind control projects was possibly Dr. Mengele. Do you have any
comment? Absolutely.
You believe that to be true?
Absolutely.
I'm curious. And he also said this, too, that Dr. Mengele, according to his research, Dr. Mengele had a big hand in developing training for special forces. Do you know anything about that?
Absolutely.
Tell me more.
Oh. Let's backtrack just a little bit here. for those of you who don't have a background in this, mind control projects actually started in the 1900s under the name of eugenics, and it was funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Rothschilds, and other groups.
Right, okay.
Okay, from there it went to Tavistock and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute, where the Rockefeller Institute put grants out for mind control and government experiments and breaking and what they call trauma-based programming. At that time, they trained Mengele, Mueller, and some of the other Nazi doctors and some of our doctors, and we were doing the similar experiments in our concentration camps as the Germans and the Japanese were.
Okay, now let me jump in right there. You're the first researcher that I've talked to, and I have to tell you, my research that I've done over the years kind of basically agrees with yours, but you're the first one that I've heard publicly say that there was a presence of certain folks or individuals involved in this stuff long before there was a Nazi regime, and that they were instrumental in training some of these people.
Absolutely. I've got it on Rockefeller Foundation paperwork now that Mengele worked for them before and they're the ones that paid for his college at Kaiser Wilhelm.
That is very interesting.
Going into a book I'm writing right now.
That's very interesting. I'd like to talk to you further about that, at another time, because that is very interesting.
So they trained these doctors, quote unquote, and they were paid for by U.S. dollars. So after World War II, they smuggled these doctors out through the Vatican rat line. Now, these doctors were brought over, and they were put to work training the Central Intelligence Agency people, training different groups, and they were doing mind control experiments on special forces, on Marine raiders, on these different groups.
Well, now, the question I have for you is this. What is their goal? I mean, when we talk about the Rothschilds and the Rockefeller Foundation and these various moneyed entities.
Illuminati group.
Illuminati group. What is their goal?
Basically, enslavement, to make a long story short.
Uh-huh.
There's enough laws on the books right now, they could microchip us, basically enslave us. They just got to get our guns away and our wills broken a little further to the point where we're running scared to the government to
so
protect us.
Basically, fear.
Fear.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, we, as in the government, manipulated a lot of the school shootings. Those kids were programmed. They're microchipped. And I'm jumping ahead. I'm going to lay a whole basis of news articles and government documents. But those kids were chipped. Those kids were getting their guns. They were told where to get their guns, how to do the shootings. And it was a part of a gun grab.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
as much as I believe the rights that we're losing after 9/11, where they have now stopped the Posse Comitatus law, where now the U.S. military can operate as a police force in the United States, and we lost a whole bunch of rights last weekend.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you're right. Interviewing Kurt Billings, who is a 20-year-plus veteran researcher into the subject of mind control, microchips, chemtrails, and other government experiments on the general public, and it's a pleasure to have him on the program with us. Welcome back, Kurt.
Thank you.
Hey, real quick, while we're talking tonight, give us your web address so the folks that are listening in on the Internet can go to your website and start looking around.
My website is psychops, psychops.com.
Okay.
psychops.com.
Okay.
And a lot of the documents I'm going to use tonight are available on my website.
Good, good. Now, when we were talking just a moment ago, you were talking about these school shootings. Now, I don't know if you're aware of it or not. I'm in Denver, where we had Columbine. And actually, there's a lot of controversy still swirling around that whole issue 2 years later.
Yeah, I got called by one of the police officers right after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well,
I wound up consulting on some of it.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you know about that.
I know a lot. to say the least, unfortunately, some of it I'm still gagged by, but I can give you some real interesting things in a roundabout way. Number one, those kids told their counselors and people around them a year in advance who they were going to kill.
Okay.
They were hearing voices.
That's interesting.
According to one source, those kids were chipped.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Those kids had more weaponry than physically impossible for their age, to say the least, on the bombs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've heard that one of the timers was a military issue.
Really?
It just goes on and on and on. They heard in the voices where to go get the guns. They were told. And it's similar to Kip Kinkle and the kids in Jonesboro, Arkansas, and a lot of the other school shootings.
Yeah. Why do we not hear about this in the mainstream press? I remember
Time magazine talked about the kids hearing voices and giving the list. They dismissed the lawsuit on that. That was actually on CNN also.
Was it really?
Yes.
Okay.
Once.
I remember Tim McVeigh, when he was first captured, mentioned something about an implant in his rear.
Time magazine.
Yeah, and he never, there was never anything more discussed about it.
Tulsa World, I'm holding a newspaper article in my hand, Tulsa World 42095. According to his military records, he was microchipped in the Gulf, believed that he was on a military mission when he was doing the Oklahoma bombing, was also seen at the Branch Davidian compound during the Waco fire.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And that was in a major newspaper.
Yeah, I'm reading from a major newspaper right now.
Okay.
It's a direct quote.
Now, for the audience, let's talk about this implant technology because, you know, I think a lot of people think this is still Dick Tracy. And I think I mentioned to you off air that I had interviewed a lady named Judy Wall, that was her name, who had started doing some work on psychotronic technology, and she had rounded up some patents. Now, you, as I understand it, have also confirmed some of that, as well as found on your own that there is technology out there that is capable of implanting a human being. Kind of go over that with us for us a little bit.
Okay. They started implanting microchips in the early 50s, and they were pretty big. I have some pictures on my website under microchip photos.
Mm-hmm.
They were square, and they were in the hand. They went to a size of about a grain of rice, which was a lithium-driven chip, which is X-rayable, and they were implanting those from the 60s clear up to the 80s. At the end of the 80s, they started to go to a carbon chip, which was a thin piece of metal with a circuit board on it that runs off the alkalinity in your body.
Okay.
From there, they went to what is now called a biochip. And it's completely biological. It runs off the alkalinity in your body. It's 1/200th the size of a hair and is made by Hughes Corporation in Colorado, Denver.
What corporation is that?
Hughes.
Hughes. No kidding.
No kidding. Electronic Leash, this is from the Tucson Weekly newspaper. It's a weekly magazine in their newspaper. This is June 15th to the 21st. It's called Electronic Leash. It says, the implantable biochip is already here. Big Brother is around the corner.
Hmm.
And you can still get that through the Tucson Library. But let me, in that article also, it has the law of the 1986 Immigration and Control Act, which gives them the right to implant a microchip under our skin for tracking everybody in the United States by presidential order.
Repeat that.
1986 Immigration and Control Act gives the right to the government to implant a microchip under our skin in the hand or the forehead without our permission for tracking under presidential order anytime.
So this is actually a presidential order that is on the books.
Right. That's one of them. I'm going to go three more.
Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, before I do that, let me give you, I've got four or five patents in my hand. On my website, under microchip photos, there's a picture of an X-ray. Now, this is not an X-ray. I don't have the actual X-ray up. This is a digital copy of the X-ray.
Okay.
So it is reversed from the X-ray, and the chip appears very black. But it's a chip that is 30 years old. It is in the forehead of a woman who was a military wife and went in for sinus surgery, and they implanted a microchip in her sinuses.
Without her knowledge?
Found.
Huh?
Pardon?
Was that without her knowledge?
Without her knowledge.
Okay.
Okay, here's some patents. Patent number 00562967-8A, personal tracking and recovery device. This is 1995. This is a chip that they were implanting to be able to track within 10 feet.
Okay.
Here, implantable homing device. This is 4706689. November 17th, 1987. This is also trackable by satellite.
Okay.
living tissue implant with electrical transponder marker. This the first date on this patent is 1997. Actually, it was originally done in 1974. I'm going to repeat, 1974. The original patent is held by the United Nations UNESCO Health Organization. This is a chip to be slipped in during surgery for the tracking of patients.
How lovely.
Without their permission.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's been going, this project has been going on since 1974.
Wow.
Okay. Let me throw a couple others, and then I'll give you some interest, another couple interesting laws.
All right.
This is from Chicago. This is was a memorandum from the Chicago Welfare Department in Illinois. The Public Aid Department, which is the AFDC, when they changed to the TANAF in 1994, they had a pilot project, and every client that received a welfare check in the city of Chicago in 1994 got a microchip in the hand for ID.
No kidding. This has already happened?
Yes, 1994.
Real quick, you do a radio program yourself, don't you?
Yes, I have one on Friday nights from 10 to 11 East Coast time.
And where is
it? WWCR, and it's also, you can catch it off my website on Soundwaves 2000.
Okay, good. Let's continue now. You were mentioning before the break that you have an article in your possession that appeared in the Chicago newspaper concerning welfare recipients having to accept a microchip in their hand. I'm curious, does it say how many people that involved? Or?
No, I'm doing research. Actually, this came from a letter from somebody who was trying to sue over it. And they were trying to, it was a lawsuit that was being filed in Illinois.
Okay.
And I got sent the material on it.
So apparently somebody has objected to this and they filed a lawsuit?
Yes, there's actually a couple, three lawsuits that are going on right now. One in Vegas for a guy who got it in medical. And the other one is in California where somebody got it in the penal system.
Okay. Now, let me ask you this. I just out of curiosity in your research, you mentioned earlier that UNESCO, which is a branch of the United Nations, what is that, the educational...
Oh, this is the part of the World Health.
Okay, World Health. What are they involved in this for? Do you have any idea or any speculation about...
Well, what they're doing is they're tracking people right now, and they're putting a huge database together.
Okay.
After somebody has surgery for something, they're tracking them and how their health is doing to where they are, what they're doing.
Now, I know that... Over the years, I've heard rumors that there are certain states in the United States, like I believe Oregon is one of them, where some people were fearful that any time that they went in for a surgical procedure that they were possibly being implanted without their knowledge. Now, have you heard anything about that?
Oh, okay. Let's go there. That program, that chip I wrote, read the patent. Let me give it to you again. It's US 5977431, living tissue implant with electronic transponder marker.
Okay.
It is being used all across the country in the hospitals, and it is being implanted in the state of Oregon, California, Virginia, West Virginia, Nevada, Missouri, and Kansas. Those are the states I have confirmed right now. Every baby that's born in the hospital is getting a microchip.
Now,
implanted.
That's incredible. Now, just kind of to give it some more background here, you included in your press release to me an article or a press release that appeared on CNN January 10th, 2002. Now, kind of give the audience an idea of how small these implants are, and kind of give us an idea about this press release and where it went.
The latest chip is 1/200th the size of a hair. It'll go through a vaccination needle with no problem.
So in other words, you could put an implant in, say, a vaccine.
Absolutely.
Injecting it into the muscle, intramuscular injection?
It's usually put, you know, like where they put the hepatitis B in the heel.
Okay.
Or if they put it into the arm of the leg.
Okay.
Chip is going to stay there.
So, in other words, this chip is not injected into the bloodstream and moves through the body. It's literally
correct.
Like implanted when they inject you, like in your butt.
Correct.
Right, goes into the muscle tissue and stays there.
Absolutely.
Now, what do these implants do? I mean, what something that small, What is that capable of doing?
Let me do two more documents before I go there, because
okay.
I want to come around and, with a couple of laws, and then I'll explain, because it ties everything together better.
Okay.
I have from the Arizona Republic, this is a 1989, this is a KidScan program, and this is part of the forerunner to the CHIP article that I sent you.
Right.
This is owned by a patent in Florida where they implanted 5,000 kids in 1989 in Florida with microchip trackable by satellite.
Okay.
Back when the Clintons, first couple of years of the Clinton administration, Hillary was doing the National Health Card,
mm-hmm.
and they passed two laws. Number one, this is from the Washington Times, October 11th, 1993, by Martin Anderson.
Okay.
And in this article, it talks about at the end of it. That people are going to lose their health ID cards, and they're going to lose their records cards, or somebody's going to learn how to manufacture them. So we need to implant those in the hand. So they passed a law, which wasn't very published, which was part of a public law package, which is a presidential edict that doesn't have to be ratified by both the House and Senate, but it was. And they passed a law that allows them to implant our national health ID card or national ID card in our hand.
Okay, all right.
So, okay, the latest chip is capable of holding records, so we can hold our driver's license, our passport, and everything, so you run your hand over a scanner, and it will read.
Okay.
It is trackable anywhere, underwater, in lead, whatever you want to go through, within 10 feet.
So, basically, just about anywhere in a public area or in your home,
mm-hmm.
they can track you.
Absolutely. Let me give you another good example. In 99, I was at Preparedness Show. I toured for a couple of years with Preparedness, and I had befriended a Denver police officer.
Mm-hmm.
And he came to me after my second lecture at Preparedness, walked me out to his car, said, "Here, give me somebody's name." And he showed me on the Denver police car their little computer where they have an entry now where you can run somebody's name, and it runs their social security, and it tells if they have a chip or not, and you're able to track their chip.
This is actually a part of the Denver Police database?
Yes.
Okay, all right. That's interesting.
So if Joe Smith down the road has a chip and he's committed a crime and you want to know where he is, you dial him up on your computer in your police car, and you can follow him to where he is within 10 feet.
Kurt, let me ask you this real quick. Just, you know, sitting there listening what you're talking about this thing, did you ask the policemen how people in the public, like in law enforcement, how do they react to such a blatant violation of people's privacy?
There are a lot of police, a lot of military are really upset. I have been getting a lot of emails from Vietnam War era veterans who went through trauma-based programming or were microchipped, and they're having troubles. Second flu shot in the Gulf War, a lot of the Gulf War veterans are now hearing voices from their microchip.
Okay.
And this has been a military experiment for a long time. And it's just people are really getting upset and mad, and it's starting to come into the public now.
Okay.
Especially now that the CNN was running commercials for the microchip. We all need to get chipped because 9/11. We need to be able to track our friends by going to the computer and looking them up in a database.
Oh, what horse crap. I'm sorry.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
That was Paula Zahn's line.
Welcome back, my guest tonight, Kurt Billings. And Kurt has been weaving quite a, I don't want to call it a tale, because we're not talking about fairy tales. We're talking about actual fact concerning a lot of technology that seems to be out there and is now upon us. I know Kurt, I'm sure you've heard this too in your career. You know, people talking about a lot of this stuff as if it would never happen, but now it's upon us. It's actually occurring now.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about Digital Angel real quick.
Oh, Digital Angel is basically the same microchip we're talking about. It's a biochip, or it's one of the old lithium chips, and
mm-hmm.
it is a quote-unquote scan your kid, put your kid in microchip. One of the major companies that's starting to come up and really endorse Digital Angel besides CNN is Disney. And Disney's going to start handing out a card that has a microchip that you can put in every one of your kids' back pockets so that they won't get lost around the park.
Wow. I feel so comfortable and safe already.
Boy, I can barely hear you again.
I say, I feel so safe and secure already.
Oh, I know. it's you know, I run out of expletives after doing this and looking at this forever. You know, I'm holding another newspaper article in my hand. This is from St. Petersburg Journal, St. Petersburg, Missouri. St. Peters, Missouri, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And the mayor in, March 3rd, 1996, the mayor has decided now that before a city council meeting, he stands up and says that I want everybody to get two chips, one in one hand and one in the other. One hooks up directly to the telephone system, so we won't need one, and the other one is a tracking chip. And he practically got thrown out of office, and his town got really mad at him on the same basis that we're talking about. Here's a violation of rights. But they have this technology.
Yeah.
And here's a mayor talking about it. That's the thing that, you know, blows me away.
If I may, I will read a little bit. I want to read one paragraph from this press release you sent me about Digital Angel. It says, Digital Angel represents the first ever combination of advanced biosensor technology and web-enabled wireless telecommunications linked to global positioning systems. By utilizing advanced biosensor capabilities, Digital Angel will be able to monitor key body functions such as temperature and pulse and transmit that data along with accurate location information to a ground station or monitoring facility. Digital Angel Corporation has announced a proposed merger with Medical Advisory Systems. Now, that right there, just that amount of information that's in that press release frightens the heck out of me because, number one, I think, and let me get your feel on this too, but as far advanced as some of this stuff is, how much longer will it be before they'll be able to actually cause pain to someone?
They already can.
They can?
That's the original basis of this chip.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of where I was headed. Back, and let's go back to our history.
Right.
Listen here. Back in the beginnings of the programming, mind control programming, they put what they call trauma-based programming together. Now, trauma is to create so much trauma that the personality splits.
Right.
Then you have this nice amnesic wall up. Well, if you don't keep giving trauma to the person,
you have to keep reinforcing it.
And the people come back together. So the first original chip was called the Stenmost. It was invented by Dr. Delgado.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Delgado, it was a remote shock device that was implanted at the base of the skull. So these chips also have the ability to inflict pain at any given moment. All they got to do is flip a switch by satellite, and everybody has one, gets pain instantly.
Now, wasn't Delgado the guy that did the demonstration with the bull?
Yes.
That's what I thought. You know, it's interesting. Several years ago, I want to say 96, 97, I think it was, I saw a paper, I guess it was a white paper, a research paper that was written by Delgado.
That's his son out of Cal Poly?
Yeah, that's it, Cal Poly.
Yeah, that's his son.
How to influence the 6 billion brains of planet Earth utilizing a common medium, which he cited in the paper, was the atmosphere.
Yep.
Now, what I'd like to do is, off the side here, what, you know, we're talking about 6 billion brains of planet Earth. Tell me what your suspicion is about the use of psychotropic drugs.
Oh.
Because I kind of suspected, reading that paper about the influencing 6 billion brains of planet Earth, that there was a certain kind of brain chemistry that was necessary to make people receptive to some type of influence.
Well, let's one-up this just a little bit.
Okay.
Let's go to chemtrails for 30 seconds.
All right.
It's going to touch one part of the chemtrails. The carrier in the chemtrails, which is the main base of what the chemtrail is ethylene dibromide, which is an alkaline-based pesticide. Alkaline being that it will go through the skin into the body, drives the microchip because it runs off of alkaline. But it's the same alkaline-based pesticide-type drug as Luvox and most of your psychotropics.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's very interesting.
That's courtesy of the Atlanta, the World Health Lab. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head because I don't have the document in front of me.
The CDC?
Yes.
The Center for Disease Control.
Yeah. That's it. And back in the MKUltra experiments, when they came from the LSD, they started developing these tranquilizers such as Luvoxin. You can name a dozen of them.
Uh-huh.
And they are all alkaline-based tranquilizers. The side effect of alkaline poisoning not only is upper respiratory problems, but it slowly takes you into a mood-altering dementia where it puts you into a hypnotic state.
Now, okay, let me ask you this. I remember, and forgive me, I can't remember the guy's name. I interviewed him, Peterson and Carnicom.
Clifford.
Clifford Carnicom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I met with him personally. He was in Denver one year, and somebody arranged a meeting. I went with him to a meeting. And at the time, and I have never experienced a cold like this. It lasted 3 months. I had to go through two rounds of antibiotics. I was in the hospital three times. I had some really weird stuff going on, and there was a lot of people that were around me that were sick. And when I met with Cliff Carnicom, he said, well, ironically, he said, I was sick for many years with an upper respiratory problem related to this chemtrail thing. So I was wondering, you know, I was wondering what the dynamic was about, you know, in other words, you're answering a lot of questions here, the dynamic of why they would be spraying this stuff over the cities. You're saying basically it puts people into some kind of a...
It can put somebody into a state of altered state of consciousness where, number one, it makes you easily hypnotized.
Okay.
The quickest way to get away from the chemtrail upper respiratory problem and this problem is to detox and bring your body back to 6.8 to 7.0. That's where you're supposed to be on alkalinity.
The body or the blood pH, right?
No, we're talking body pH.
Body pH.
As in saliva or urine.
I want to mention real quick, this is our final break before we go to our network, Kurt. So we have just a short segment on this one. And then what I want to do is next hour, I want to pick up on the angle of satanic ritual abuse, as well as, you know, some of the history of this stuff, because that is very important, too. I think people need to know where all this is coming from. I mean, this isn't just, you know, a group of scientists and doctors, you know, designing technology that they claim is going to help us. I think there's a much more nefarious reason for this stuff, right?
Absolutely. A couple of things that don't get out very much on the radio. The first person to die from a chemtrail was actually during World War II. They were actually aerial spraying our troops for experiments on germ warfare. The first person on record that sued the government and won it died from a chemtrail was in the 60s in San Francisco, where they were spraying influenza. For almost 15 years, they sprayed various forms of influenza to check to see how biological warfare would go across. This is from the 40s to the 60s in
mm-hmm.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Just so people know, about 3 weeks before 9/11, they were spraying smallpox and other viral little biological warfare things over Montana.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Part of a chemtrail experiment.
Now, was this in the in the press or?
Yeah,
it was.
Was.
God, that's incredible. Okay, well, real quick, give out your website again.
Psychops.
Yeah.
PsychOps.com. Quickly, 30 seconds here.
Yeah.
Well, less than 30 seconds. Powder chemtrail generation machine, U.S. patent 3899144. I have the patent for the machine that sprays the powder out of either the exhaust or from the fuselage of the plane. Patent owned by U.S. Navy and Central Intelligence Agency. Just a coincidence.
Oh, not a coincidence. I'm sure you've learned in this business, right, Kurt, that there's no such thing as coincidence.
I know it. I love it. Sometimes you go, that's the only way.
Okay.
Get people's attention.
I know what you mean. Real quick, what is the two books you wrote, Somewhere Under the Rainbow? What was that about?
It was about the occult. And it was a small little booklet. It was on the occult and different practices in the schools. Generation Deceived was on school curriculum and touched on Columbine. Columbine being the first school in the country to have its own suicide club. Part of the Hemlock Society.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
And it talked about anything from witchcraft in the schools, where they were having an epidemic of kids getting AIDS in the Dallas school system from vampirism, kids drinking other kids' blood.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
So it was all on why kids can't read and why we're having such a problem with suicide rate in the schools.
What's going on? I mean, now, you know, it sounds like you've really researched this stuff in depth. What's going on here? I mean, you're talking about kids, you know, imitating vampires and doing all this weird stuff and schools having a curriculum on death and suicide and that type of thing. What is going on?
It's just they've taken every value system they could out, and now they're searching for value systems. And to make a long story short, Columbine had a suicide and epithet thing long before any school. That was the pilot project was at Columbine High School.
You know, I interviewed, and I don't remember her name, but I interviewed a young lady apparently who was a student there several years before, you know, the incident that occurred in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Who told me about this this class where they made them lay in a coffin, you know,
yep.
they made them focus or meditate on death, you know, and that type of thing.
Write their own epitaph.
Yeah.
Plan their own funeral. Go to the funeral parlor. I'm the one who sent 2020 the letter that featured Columbine in the early 90s before the shooting on the Suicide Club. They did have the highest suicide rate in the nation. And one of the things they taught in that class was that everybody goes to heaven, including Adolf Hitler. So why wait? Kill yourself now.
Wow. I know.
Quote out of the curriculum.
And, you know, I remember her testimony was that she became extremely depressed and I think attempted suicide or almost committed suicide.
Yes, absolutely.
Based upon this morose that she kind of got from taking this class.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit more about Columbine, because it was kind of interesting. You know, you were involved in it in some aspect. I was a stringer for the BBC for one day, you know, with the Columbine deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the interesting thing is that what I found interesting from my research into this mind control thing, there were certain interesting characteristics that were present with the two shooters, Klebold and Harris. Did you find anything concurrent to that as well?
Oh, there's another point. There's a lot of interesting things with those kids. Those kids seem to be robotic, programmed type kids, you know, like they just came out of a video game.
Right.
Virtual reality type.
Some people were speculating that it was kind of interesting that The Matrix had made its debut.
Absolutely.
Days before this occurred, and that these boys had patterned themselves after the characters in The Matrix.
Yes. I have heard all kinds of rumors about, you know, them being video game nuts and everything else. And all I know from what I've heard from people from the police department talking to me is that those kids were hearing voices and they were acting out on what the voices were telling them to do. You know, there's another interesting little piece that happened in Columbine, and part of one of the lawsuits involved that the SWAT team was held back by some federal CIA, quote, person for a long time, and one guy bled to death, and they're still trying to get that lawsuit in.
Well, here's something interesting about that. You know, being here in Denver, we were seeing that. I was actually home that day when this thing came on the air, and what was really interesting is that moments after the shooting began, there was, if I'm not mistaken, and don't hold me to this, but this is something I understood. Moments after the shooting began, there was already a federal SWAT team or federal presence there at the school.
Yes, and actually it was an hour before. I have actually talked to one of the operatives that was there.
Well, I heard that to be, you know, like I said, I heard that there was something strange about that, and that indeed these federal people prohibited the you know, the local authorities from entering the school to even try to put a stop to it.
Absolutely. And I've heard that from one of the persons that was there. I heard it from somebody from the Denver police office. And the CIA, there was a CIA presence there, and they admit they were holding them back. I do not know.
One other thing, too. There was something to it. Maybe you know more about this. Wasn't there a boy that went to school there a couple of years, I think, before this happened, whose dad is like a bureau chief of the FBI office in Denver?
I've heard that.
Have you been able to confirm that at all?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Okay. And that the video, this boy did a video project that basically was almost wrote what Klebold and Harris ultimately did. Did you hear that too?
Yes.
I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah. The other rumor I've heard is that they were practicing somewhere beforehand, and that just blows me away. I haven't confirmed that myself, but there was a Columbine website, and the guy was out of Sedona, Arizona, and he said that he has proof that they were practicing.
You mean
somewhere beforehand?
Like these kind of exercises where they were, you know, staging the shootings, you mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, you know, there's a lot of mystery, and of course there is a very large blanket over this, even today, I mean, here in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's lawsuits continuing, and I know that they make national news, but there's a lot of stuff that hasn't even come out yet, and there's a lot of people at the Jefferson County Sheriff's Department that refuse to talk. I mean, just it is a very bizarre case, very bizarre.
Yes.
Returning is my guest, Kurt Billings, and we're talking about a very interesting topic tonight, and that's mind control, microchips, government experiments on the general public without their knowledge. You know, one of the things that Kurt mentioned earlier is the radiation experiments. I know that a lot of this stuff has come out since the mid-70s, beginning with the church committee hearings on the CIA's MKUltra. And it moves forward from there, and some of the stuff is just absolutely shocking that this was going on. But, Kurt, in your travels, what I don't understand is the public knows, for the most part, that this kind of stuff has occurred. I'm curious why no one has ever basically filed suits or done something to put a stop to it.
Actually, there's been some suits filed.
Have there?
One in Canada, and... let me go grab the piece of paper. This is from the Times Colonialist, November 1992. Brainwashing victims should receive $100,000 apiece after surviving 20 years of experiments and surviving 20 years to get the lawsuits through the courts in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
There's now a new lawsuit in Canada where they are still doing experiments up in Canada through MKUltra. And I've actually, one of the people involved, one of the parties has sent me some of their stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it is just absolutely, they're still doing experiments up in the psychiatric wards of Canada, funded by the U.S. government.
It's amazing to me. I mean, you know, you think all along, you know, you think everything is hunky-dory, everything is wonderful, and you find out that this kind of stuff has been going on a long, long time, and, you know, it's getting pretty close to being such a reality now. I think it spells real bad for our way of life.
That's an understatement.
I know.
And it just there's no statement you can make with the stuff from. I was involved in a case in the mid '80s at Fort Lewis in Washington. This is the Special Forces base, where they were finding animals, and I won't get too graphic, but animals with the blood drained out and cut up in little sacrifice, you know, pentagrams and hexagrams and stuff.
Right.
And they were finding body parts.
Human body parts?
Human body parts.
What was that all about?
Well, it seemed to be that Michael Aquino, who was stationed there.
Really?
Yes. Gee, what a coincidence. The first satanic chaplain of the military, thanks to our government tax dollars funding his Church of Satan,
mm-hmm.
And one of the one who got the satanic chaplains into the military now that they can practice Satanism in the military and do their sacrifices and stuff.
Right.
But that's a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I got called in. I was living in, I grew up on the West Coast, and I got called up one day by a military police officer that had sat in a ritual abuse conference that we did in Seattle. And he asked me to look at some crime scenes on Fort Lewis. So I went down, and we looked, and I went, gee, you have some really active people here.
Wow.
And I got to look at three or four crime scenes, and they were found that the animals were dropped, and these were cattle and dogs and cats and stuff, that were dropped away from the actual site, kind of lifted up and moved away like they were picked up by a helicopter and dropped.
Really? So
what a coincidence.
So basically what we're saying here, what you're saying here is that what may appear to be, you know, the classic animal mutilation that the UFO people are so fond of talking about may, in fact, be the work of Satanists.
actually the U.S. military.
Wow.
They were running a thing up there called the First Earth Battalion. It was run by Jim Shannon, Michael Aquino, UNSU Brotherhood, MK Ultra, and different MK Ultra scientists, and so on. And they were teaching the military ways to use witchcraft and psychic powers. And they were doing animals. This is what it turned out to be, this case. And I got the bums rushed off the base after we found out that it was Michael Aquino and others doing these sacrifices. It was part of a military plan. Anyway, they were doing sacrifices to draw power and bring up certain spirits so that their military can have more power.
This sounds, I mean, this sounds incredible.
I'm reading from a manual, military manual.
An actual military manual.
Yes.
Oh,
my. Yes. I also have some documents from one of the hearings after the church hearing in the 80s where they were doing voodoo rituals down in Texas at Fort Hood. And once again, military manual, chicken's blood in the whole nine yards, rituals to draw power for the soldiers before they do their war games.
No kidding.
No kidding.
This is actually in a military manual that they train from.
Absolutely.
Now, this is incredible. I've heard this kind of stuff come up before. And, you know, there's been so much done toward, you know, the aspect of remote viewing. It's always struck me as kind of odd that there were a lot of military people involved in remote viewing. Now, the thing is, and I don't think, as incredible as it sounds like it is something that is plausible because of the fact that, you know, there's so much being done with the occult.
Remote viewing, some of it is very... plausible.
Yeah, it is.
Possible.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't shoot it in the foot, but some of it is smoke and mirrors.
Well, okay. Let me ask you this. This would probably be a good place to start talking about, you know, ritual abuse and the occult. Because mm-hmm. the reason I say that is because I think most people realize that a lot of this stuff that was brought over from Nazi Germany... You know, the Nazis were deeply involved in Satanism.
Absolutely.
And they were looking for military applications to it. And Malachi Martin, again, who I interviewed a couple of times, discussed this at great length about, you know, the dynamic between satanic ritual abuse and mind control.
Absolutely. It's used hand in hand.
Okay. Can you give me an idea, just for the audience, how that is done?
Okay, let me throw another document at you just for everybody, since I'm on a paranormal network, and I'll start a little controversy.
Okay, go ahead.
One of the projects was MK Naomi, which is part of the MK Ultra project.
Right.
And that was part of to make people believe that they were abducted by aliens by using aliens to do experiments. And these aliens are in rubber suits or nylon suits, and they grab people. And they did experiments on these people, and they were U.S. soldiers from the MK Ultra department.
Okay.
Part of that turned out to be what they call an alien ritual, where they were grabbing kids, strapping them down, and doing graphic sex rituals, cutting blood, anything from having to eat feces to all kinds of nice things. And these people believed, quote-unquote, that they were, because of the psychotropics that they were on, that they were abducted from aliens. But when they started to look at their memories, they realized that there was SRA involved in it on top of it.
Okay.
This is part of the mind control programming to make so much trauma that, just basically cause a split.
Multiple personality type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, Kurt, what do you know about the Greenbaum speech?
Oh, what do you want to know?
I was introduced to that several years ago.
I have a copy sitting in front of me.
Okay, tell us about that. What does that involve?
It was a counselor who was trying to explain a lot of the mind control phenomena that a lot of the other counselors were finding and trying to draw some parallels in the programming and the programming structure.
Okay.
And he went into a lot of background from anything from quote-unquote Joseph Mengele and the Nazi doctors to levels of programming and how it was put together.
Now, for the audience, kind of describe, because this phenomena, apparently from what I can gather, and I'm sure this is something that bears out in your research, that there it seems to be a lot of people, not just in the United States, but around the world, who have, for some reason or another, been selected to receive this type of training when they're children. Outline for me what you find in your research about this.
Well, basically, it's normally there's two or three different setups here. One, you have the multi-generational families who have been in this for a very long time, and they keep doing it and doing it. And these same experiments have been from Germany and Europe to Canada to Australia, all over the world. And they were all branched out of eugenics experiments. So you have what we call full blood, which means that both their parents are genetically, you get into the genetics and breeding and a lot of the satanic ritual abuse end of the thing. This is to answer your last question with the same with this.
Okay.
They did a lot of breeding ritual setup where you worked your way through levels of satanic ritual and magic. At the same time, you were getting the programming, and if you were to be punished, you would have certain rituals done to you, and it was interlocked with a lot of the programming. That's to answer your last question. A lot of this is set up where you have both parents in full blood, half blood, one of your parents in, one of your parents out, and then people who they grab in the military that they want to do a job that they want them to forget, and they just, grab them and do them. A lot of the example of that is that, like in Vietnam, where the people were doing the map recon photo stuff, they compartmentalized those people so that if they saw us bringing a load of heroin out, that they could put that in the back and those people wouldn't remember it. So you have various types of programming.
Now, the goal, of course, is not only for what they might consider short-term control things, like, keeping somebody's mouth shut about heroin shipments, but the long-term part of it is, from what I can gather, is that, when you talk about generational stuff, you're talking about breeding people generationally to stay in control, ultimately to realize what some people call the New World Order, I guess.
Absolutely. You have people that can have thousands of altars and many, many levels and different, what a programmer's term would be, multiple worlds, where you want to trigger somebody, you can give them a hand signal and it'll bring up a part from three levels down that comes up and is a sexual slave or an assassin or a courier. And when this part's up, the other parts don't know, and there's all kinds of amnesic walls, and a lot of the parts don't know the other parts exist, and you have a front group of parts that are normally put in the body and locked in so that they don't even know the systems are there. So they go about their everyday life of being a doctor or a lawyer or whatever.
What seems to be, in your research, what have you found to be, like, for example, I could go along with this idea that alien abductions are something else.
Some of them are, some of them aren't.
What do you think some of them are? Break out for me what you think the two things here are that are going on.
Well, I find in the MKUltra documents that anybody that sees anything from government flying planes going across to actually visit from somewhere they think is an alien, quote unquote, they grab these people and drag them into MKUltra.
So, in other words, if a person may have seen something, they would they attract this
they grab
crowd.
Them. It was part of the project where if you thought you saw an alien, you went to the press, you were grabbed, and you were programmed. Your kids were grabbed and programmed.
Why is that?
Because they didn't want whatever they were afraid of out. So they started to control these people the minute they went to the press and said, "Hey, I saw something."
What do you think is going on with that? In other words,
they were scared of something. I haven't got to the bottom of that end of it. I'm an extreme skeptic, but
yeah.
I believe there's something there.
Do you think when you say there's something there, either it's not human, non-human intelligence, maybe?
Correct.
My question to you is this, and I'm talking to a seasoned veteran. So you'll understand this question. I hope the audience follows along with us on this. But one of the things that I noticed when I researched the Church Committee hearings and the different branches, the subgroups under MKUltra, one of them was called Often, and it had to do with occult research.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question I'm wondering is, have they had some maybe involvement with letting, say, a genie out of a bottle, or do you think that perhaps going a little bit more into the dynamic of a demonic kind of a thing, which some people have suggested that it is, do you think that, that maybe there is some kind of cooperation? For example, psychotronics is a very interesting word in and of itself, because one of the things that I have never been able to do is nail down, you know, the mnemonics of it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You try to find out what it is specifically. What is psychotronics? And you get all these weird, ambiguous statements tags or things like that. But yet, one of the things that Carl Raschke wrote about in Painted Black, have you read that?
No, I haven't, but go on. I'll probably catch on real quick.
Well, one of the things that he discovered in his research, you know, talking about Aquino, was that Aquino equated psychotronics with a higher form of black magic.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the linkage here is that the Nazis were researching, black magic.
Hermetic witchcraft.
Exactly. And they were utilizing electronics, you know, the altered state of consciousness thing and achieving that with drugs can
Absolutely.
Be achieved through electromagnetic influence
Absolutely.
On the
and
human
I'll try
body.
To, try to answer that question. Well, the PK or telepathic or some of the things, when you think of those things, you can mention the ELF machine, which, is able to broadcast directly in the brain. But I think more what you're headed for and what I've seen in documentation for a long time is the actual breeding and setting up people for their powers of being able to throw electromagnetic fields, be able to throw a blow with their hand like you see on quote-unquote kung fu or some of these martial arts where they're harnessing their chi and they're able to throw it, knock the wind out of them just by not even touching them.
Right.
Or the Aikido, which they've been doing. And yes, they have been using this for a long time. And yes, they have been breeding people for it, and they have been breeding people actually in the military for it, quote unquote. And I've seen that all documented.
Let me ask you this. What do you know about a character named C.B. Scott Jones?
I don't.
Okay. One of the things that I came across a couple of years ago was a retired naval guy named C.B. Commander Scott Jones, who was involved with Lawrence Rockefeller and a group called the I can't even remember the name of it now, the Human Potential Foundation.
Okay, I've heard of that.
Yeah. There was a word that they were banting around at that group, and one of the things that Claiborne Pell was doing, as I understand it, which was exposed, I think, ultimately by Jack Anderson,
mm-hmm.
was that Pell was sending these guys out around and picking up these people, like you mentioned earlier, who were having extremely strange experiences. One of the words that they kept banting around that I found very, very curious was applied anomalous trauma. Okay? Now, when they say applied, I kind of often wondered what that means. You know what I'm saying? It sounds kind of interesting, like, you know, it might be something they can engineer.
Oh, absolutely. You can throw an energy field and knock somebody's backside across the building. I mean, it is just absolutely amazing to see some of this stuff, and this is some of the stuff that my dad was messing with being a martial arts expert and training assassins, where you were taking the quote-unquote ninja black arts, where they were touch a person and they died weeks later.
Yeah.
And that stuff exists, and you can study martial arts and see. They've been harnessing it for a very long time, and the military has been harnessing it since the Vietnam War.
Is your dad still living?
No, he died in 77 from every form of cancer known to man.
No
at
kidding.
Once.
Well, if he were alive today, what would he be saying about what the state of things are today? I mean, this is really in our face.
Oh, he was disgusted in the 70s. You can imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just absolutely disgusted. He started talking to me when he was in his, he died in 62, and he was telling me he was retiring, and he had made too many monsters for domestic work.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing. A lot of the people who are in Delta and Special Forces are programmed. In some form or another.
Malachi Martin told me one time, and he said this on the air, so I'm not violating any confidence, but He told me that somebody from the Reagan administration had approached him one time wanting to, you know, because he was an exorcist, okay?
Mm-hmm. I know, I've met Malachi.
Okay, well, he was approached by someone at the, I guess it was in the Reagan administration, and they wanted to know why some of these guys in the special forces display the characteristics of demonic possession. And I guess he investigated it or looked into it and came back with the conclusion that some of these guys are.
Absolutely. They are playing with Satanism. They are using it before they go into battle. They're bringing up these demons. And yes, absolutely, positively, no doubt.
That's bizarre. That is absolutely bizarre.
And I can, unfortunately, I can document that on military manuals.
Wow. That is really interesting. I mean, that is incredible. Now, let me ask you this. We're running out of time, and I know we got a lot. I'm going to have you back. But let's move on to what you see. Who is behind all of this, and what is going on here?
You've got a group of the super rich, quote unquote, the Illuminati, which can be Skull and Bones running it or other groups from Europe. But you have a one world government coming together.
What is their, you know, their goal is, I know, to take over the world, basically.
One monetary system and enslavement. I mean, that's the nicest way I can put it. And, you know, I wish that I was wrong, and I wish this wasn't coming, but we're losing rights right and left. Our Constitution's gone out the window. I mean, Posse Comitatus went down. That's one law I thought wouldn't go down. I thought everybody and their brother would be screaming, and now everybody's saying, yes, bring the military in to protect us.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw a news article the other day about creating another command. Mm-hmm. Over Canada and the United States. Is that what you're talking about?
No, they have given, as of next year, home security is going to be given to a 4-star general. And they're going to put the U.S. military into home security where the U.S. military can patrol as police in the United States. That was not this week, but the Saturday speech for Bush.
Okay, what's the Posse Comitatus thing you're talking about?
Posse Comitatus is where the military can work as a police force. There was a set of laws against it so that we can't come in and turn our own people or so on. Now, it was called the Posse Comitatus Law, and they threw that out with this.
So,
essentially, by presidential order.
Essentially, then, what they're saying is that it's legal now, or will
martial
be
law. He's basically declared martial law, and they're letting the military come in and can run our streets and our government and everything.
What do you think was behind the September 11th deal?
Well, being that we used a lot of bin Laden's people for CIA operations, you know, I've seen so much evidence we knew in advance that it's scary. They were running evacuation drills the week before. They'd never run an evacuation drill. There were calls from one of the aircraft carriers that was in off New York. Now, when's the last time you remember an aircraft carrier off New York in non-wartime?
Yeah. What do you think? Now, I noticed you had something linking on your site to this Matt Drudge thing about this weird thing that went over the...
They believe that they had a missile. They were trying to shoot one of those planes down over New York. Yeah, right. Somebody unleashed a bunch of missiles over New York. And they have a picture of the missile going through the building.
I saw that clip. Now, have you seen the one that's on the Japanese website?
No.
There is one on a Japanese website that has a camera that is a much greater distance from the New York skyline, and you can see something very weird taking place. I mean, what do you think it was, a missile?
I think it was a missile. It could be an electronic pulse weapon. I've heard. I think it was a missile. I think somebody decided they were going to shoot the sucker down no matter what. Somebody just was stupid, you know, because that plane could have landed just about anywhere or blown up and killed as many or more than the building did. And I also believe that the plane in Pennsylvania was shot down by a missile.
You know, the thing is about the missile theory is that when I was looking at the Japanese footage, it doesn't have the characteristic of a missile. It's really bizarre. It arcs through the sky at a great rate of speed. There's no contrail or no jet exhaust or anything like that. It's just very strange.
You'll have to send that to me.
I will do that. I definitely will do that. One thing I want to mention, I got an email from somebody wanting to know what the URL for that Japanese website is. I don't have that handy right this minute, but what I'm going to do is, for that listener who's listening to the program and wants to know about that, I will put a link to it on the website tomorrow. So you'll be able to go to the website, our website, tomorrow, and you'll be able to see it. I'll put it on there for you, and then I'll send it also to you, Kurt, okay?
I'm going to throw it up under my website under Breaking News. So.
Yeah, yeah. It's very interesting. I mean, it's well worth checking out because, again, it's a different perspective at a greater distance from the skyline, and you can see this thing move across the frame very rapidly, and it's very weird. It's just weird.
I'm interested.
real quick, tell me about this book that you're working on, because I know you're working on a book.
I'm working on a book. I was working on a book when there's been so many things happened, and I was approached by several of the major gun groups like the NRA and others and said, hey, put a book out that ties to school shootings, microchips, the chaos and everything that the government's creating, and give us a basic understanding of it. And we're putting out a basic book right now that's going to go into the microchips, the school shootings, how they're controlling and manipulating our freedoms, a little bit on the ELF machine, and some of the basics. And then I'm going to write the next book we have coming out after that is a book on a manual on the programming.
Okay. All right. When is the first one out? Due out?
We're hopefully going to have that out about 4 months or so.
Good. Good. Okay. Give out your website address again. And I've got a link on my webpage to you, but give it out again.
PsychOps.com.
Okay.
PsychOps.com. It's Psychic Operations without the hyphen in it, which is headquarters at Fort Bragg.
Can anybody go on your website, send you email? Is there a link to you on email?
Yep, my email's on there. It's the quickest way to get a hold of me. It's kj@psychops. Letter K, letter J, at psychops.com.
Good, good. Listen, I want to thank you. It's been a very interesting 2 hours, and I want to have you back.
Oh, I appreciate it. That's probably one of my favorite interview I've done in probably 2 or 3 years.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I have to tell you, you're a very, very, very interesting guest and very articulate. And I can tell you do a really good radio show yourself. I'll have to tune in your show and hear it.
Thank you.
Okay. Again,